Turn up the radio and sing along. It's time for another great song. This is the Great Song Podcast.
Season's greetings and welcome once again to the Great Song Podcast. I'm Rob Alley.
I am JP Motor.
I almost stole your cadence there and I apologize
all right.
For
You're
it.
Good, man.
Not trying to break up the show. We're here to celebrate the greatest songs in modern music history. We're going to tell you what makes them great, why we think they're awesome, and why you should too. JP, how you doing today, man?
Man, I am doing fantastic. Woo. So we are wrapping up Ladies Month and folks are like, are y'all going to end Ladies Month on a low note? And we're like, no.
Absolutely not.
No, 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 no. We're like, no. We are wrapping up this month dedicated to ladies with a bombastic acoustic masterpiece.
Woo-hoo.
Rob, tell them what we're talking about today.
This is Black Horse and the Cherry Tree by Katie Tunstall.
2, 3, 4.
Ooh. Knows it better than I know myself, so I'm gonna let it do all the talking.
Ooh-hoo. Ooh-hoo.
I came across a place in the middle of nowhere with a big black horse and a cherry tree.
Ooh-hoo. Ooh-hoo.
I felt a little fear upon my back. I said, don't look back, just keep on walking.
Ooh-hoo. Ooh-hoo.
When the big black horse said, look this way, he said, hey, that day, will you marry me?
Cool use of effects coming on just that line.
Ooh-hoo. But I said, no, 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 no. I said, no, no, you're not the one for me. No, 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 no. I said, no, no, you're not the one for me.
Dude, this song is so tough. Like, you know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
This song is maybe small in stature. You know what I mean? But it wears a leather vest.
That's right.
And it will beat you to a pulp if you cross it.
It's so funny the way we've staggered these Ladies Month. We went from like Lee and Kate, who are the most caring, sweetest.
Yeah.
And we've sandwiched them between two girls that could beat the snot out of us.
Yes.
That were like, yeah, that would kick
absolutely.
Us in the teeth physically yeah. and with song.
That's right. That would be Katie Tunstall and Tracy Bonham, who are both very sweet.
Amazing ladies.
But also like just, yeah, tough.
Oh,
like,
it's awesome.
You know?
It's great.
So, and we're going to speak to Katie Tunstall here in just a little bit after
so
we talk
cool.
about the song.
So cool.
Stick around for that. She's awesome. She was so kind to spend a few minutes with us. So can't wait to talk to her. But first, let's talk about Black Horse and the Cherry Tree by Katie Tunstall from the 2004 album Eye to the Telescope. You ever done the telescope prank where you like put
black around the eye.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Classic. I think
good.
It's one of those things that people probably did on like sitcoms and stuff that never really happened in real life.
Everybody does it. Kind
yeah.
of those laughs and.
Not a lot of people actually using telescopes anyway, just for fun anymore. Maybe it was a bigger thing in
the
50s and 60s.
Do you have a friend that has a telescope?
Yeah, my stepdad has a telescope.
Yeah.
My sons had telescopes at one point, but I feel like people buy telescopes and then just never use them.
I have a friend that has a telescope, and it's set up really cool. But my favorite telescope story while we're on telescopes.
Might as well. How often do you get a chance?
My cousin, when we were growing up, she had a skylight in the top of her bedroom,
uh-huh.
which was so cool because you could lay in the bed and look up at the stars,
easy
which
now.
Is kind of neat. I mean, yeah, but it's cool. And she had a telescope that she could look up through the skylight,
okay.
out the roof of her house.
Okay.
And it was just really neat.
Talk about the position of Uranus and all that stuff. You can't talk about stars and planets and not make a Uranus joke, right? It's just not. I refuse to ever call it Uranus.
That's right.
It's not. I'll never do it. Okay. Anyway, back to this. How did we, from the 2004 album, Eye to the Telescope, let's just pretend none of that ever happened. Black Horse and the Cherry Tree went to number 20 on the Hot 100, number 15 on the mainstream Top 40, number 4 on the U.S. Adult Contemporary chart, and number 1 on the U.S. Adult Top 40 and U.S. Adult Alternative Songs charts. It also went to number 7 in Canada and number 10 in Katie's native Scotland and top 20 in several other countries. It held several year-end positions as well. It was number 57 for all of 2006 on the Hot 100, number 12 on the USAC chart, and number 5 on the U.S. Adult Top 40. And on into 2007, it was number 21 on the U.S. Adult Contemporary chart for the entire year. It was nominated for a 2000 Grammy for Best Female Pop Vocal Performance, along with Unwritten by Natasha Bedingfield, You Can Close Your Eyes by Sheryl Crow.
Oh,
interesting. How about
we
that?
Go.
We talked about that last week.
To last week.
Stupid Girls by Pink, and the winner Ain't No Other Man by Christina Aguilera. This was like the year of the MySpace single.
Yeah.
Right? You remember how many of those were on people's MySpace player songs? That was like the coolest thing about it. It was like, this is how I'm feeling right now, and I'm going to express it in song. And as soon as you click on my page, you're going to hear, Ain't No Other Man. Like, you know, I don't know. But that was those were like definitely the MySpace singles for that year. Other songs up for Grammys that year were Waiting on the World to Change, You're Beautiful, Bad Day, Daniel Powder, Over My Head, Cable Car, Hips Don't Lie, Promiscuous.
Those are all the same. Let's be Bad Day, Over My Head. What, yeah. was the Daniel, what was the one that you said before that?
You're Beautiful.
You're Beautiful. Yeah, James Blunt. That's the same song.
Yes.
Let's just be honest. It's the same guys singing the same song. Even that's John Mayer doing Waiting on the World Changes.
Yeah.
He's singing their same song.
Right. It's true.
That's amazing. That's
and then you had like Promiscuous, Crazy by Gnarls Barkley. It was the year of MySpace, dude.
It was totally
the year of MySpace. Black Horse and the Cherry Tree also got a big bump in the U.S. thanks to American Idol, which was still a massive cultural show at that point. Like, it's sort of, I don't want to say it's fizzled, but it's not, for a minute, American Idol was
everything.
The thing, captivated the nation.
Yeah, and we talked with Katie about Catherine McPhee singing it and giving it a big jump there.
Yeah.
So y'all like her takes on that and everything. It's really cool.
Yeah. Let's see. But after its appearance on American Idol, when Catherine McPhee sang it, the single jumped up 56 positions, eventually landing in the top 20.
Man.
And then Catherine McPhee came back and did it again the final week of the show. For her last performance. That was the year, by the way, of the Soul Patrol with your winner, Taylor Hicks. I don't know if you remember that. That like nobody believed he was 30 years old. That was like the age cap for American Idol. And Taylor Hicks won with a head full of gray hair. Everybody went, there's no way you're 30, dude. And I got to introduce this sidebar. If I mention Taylor Hicks, there's one thing that I think about. First, it's the Soul Patrol. That's like his thing, right? His fans were the Soul Patrol. But so he performed as his Idol winning song. It was called Do I Make You Proud. It was like a you know, they always go for something that's like uplifting for the U1 song.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah.
And so Do I Make You Proud, written by Tracy Ackerman, Andy Watkins, and Paul Wilson. And first of all, here's an idea of how huge Idol was at that point. First of all, do you know the song?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Should I know it? Is it popular?
Well, it was huge for a second because of how huge Idol was. After the Idol finale, Do I Make You Proud sold almost 200,000 physical copies.
Holy cow.
And 40,000 downloads in its first week.
Play it.
In
I got to
week.
I got to know
okay,
this.
All right.
So.
I've never been the one to raise my hand. That was not me.
I'm so glad you asked me to play this.
This is him?
And now that's who I am because of you.
It sounds like here, it sounds like Kenny Rogers and Lionel Richie had a kid.
Dude, yes, that's Kenny Rogers.
My heart is full of endless gratitude. You were the one who got me through. Now I can see.
So you don't know this song, right?
I don't.
We'll
think
see
so.
If we hit the chorus, but this is what I'm saying about the power of American Idol at that point. Is you don't even know this song.
This is what we dream about.
Nuh-uh.
But the only question,
I mean, it sounds like a song, you know, like
it certainly is a song.
Nope.
Okay. All right. Nuh-uh. So that's what I'm talking about. That's the power of Idol at that point, right? Is that song that you don't even know,
no.
and you're the music guru, that sold 200,000 copies in a week.
Is it playing again?
Because of American Idol. Now what I'm going to play for a second is the Weird Al Yankovic parody. This is called Do I Creep You Out, and it's much better.
You're the one I dream about, but the only question with me now is do I creep you out?
Listen to this bridge. It's so funny.
Call you every night and hang up. Gonna carve your name in my lake. In my lake. So
if the pit stains on your blouse? And do I creep you?
Key change.
Do I creep you out?
Anyway, it's great. so good, dude. That's one of my all-time favorite Weird Al parodies, Do I Creep You Out? Anyway, back to Black Horse and the Cherry Tree, which got this whole conversation started. A few listening notes. First of all, how many of us thought this was Annie Lennox? Raise your hand, wherever you are, even if it's on the steering wheel, raise your hand if you thought the Woohoos were Annie Lennox, right? It's such an easy, it doesn't take a big mental leap to go, yeah, that's Annie Lennox.
It's like all the other members of the Eurythmics are like, hand raised. It's like, even you? Really?
How dare you? Okay, the rhythm of the melody is so natural and full of swagger. I'm talking about the verses now when we get into the verses, okay? Just listen. It's an incredibly confident song, especially to have such sparse production, right? Yeah. I mean, some of the, and we're going to talk about Meet the Band in just a minute, but some of the heroes of this song are the percussion. You've got just little, like, it's like a drumstick banging on a pole kind of sounds, you know what I mean? Ding, 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 ding. You know what I mean? And then tambourine in the chorus.
Did that sound like, did Rob just write a little Big Town song? He's like, drumstick banging on a pole. Then the high harmonies come in. Drumstick banging on a pole.
Oh my gosh. I think we did. That's copyright.
That's right.
2022. Great song podcast.
I'm pitching it to him.
Really sparse production. It's her acoustic, which is play. First of all, the riff is on an acoustic guitar played on like one string. Boom, 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 boom. Right. It's not some big huge thing, but it just feels so right. Yeah. Everything about it is like bouncy and tough. And then her vocal just like smacks you around for 3 minutes. And then listen to this line. This is going to be in the second verse where the lyric says, so I stopped it dead for a beat or two. Okay, listen to how everything works together to sell this line.
And my heart hit a problem in the early hours, so I stopped it dead for a beat or two. Ooh.
Right? Yeah. So you get the stop, and then when she says beat or two, you get two hits on the percussion. Yeah. Cat, cat. Yeah. And then you're back in. I love that. And then this, her vocal on this next, the ending of this next phrase, won't forgive me after all these years, is like, it's just so tough, dude. Like, listen to this.
But I cut some cord and I shouldn't have done it, and it won't forgive me after all these years.
Bruh, the like natural like compression and like grit
growl
has in her voice there. Dude, good. Put that up against any, I don't care, any whoever your toughest, like whatever dude vocalist you've got that's like has a tough voice.
Yeah.
I put it up against anything, dude. That is
put it up against Taylor Hicks.
Yeah. Yeah, man. If she sang that in Taylor Hicks's face, he would immediately start crying. Like, would not even be able to handle it.
His gray hair's falling out. Yeah. It's awesome. That's good, man.
And then another really cool thing about this is you really owe it to yourself to watch her do this live, right?
Oh, absolutely.
When we talked to her about live looping and stuff, you know, and a lot of people know that like Ed Sheeran, if you go see him live, he's going to do a lot of live looping. She was doing this, you know, earlier.
Predecessor by far.
That's right. And so she, you know, you go to see her live and she does this by setting up the loop and she's like hitting things and she loops the woohoo and then she woohoo.
It's awesome.
And then, you know, all that stuff. And then a little percussion in there too. It's just very cool to watch her set it all up and then perform the song.
Yeah.
On the spot, she's building a track for you, you know, and it's really neat. Okay, I've got some on the album, but why don't we go ahead and meet the band now, and then we'll talk about the album.
Hey, let's meet the band. It's time to meet the band. Hey, mama, let's meet the band. Let's all meet the band.
Hey! All right, we're going to meet the band, which will be real short. No, I'm just kidding. There's only two people that play on this track, but I'm going to talk about the band that plays on the full album. Just to give them their mention, but basically only Katie and Luke on this track. So we'll mention the band, the rest below, and then I'll talk on who Luke is below. But Katie Tunstall, vocals. She plays some lead guitar, Wurlitzer, pianette, shell tone horn, piano, dope for bass, chimes, and additional percussion on this album. Steve Osborne also plays some shell tone horn, bass, additional guitar, and percussion. Arnulf Linder on double bass, bass guitar, and baritone guitar on different tracks. Martin Tarif, some additional keyboards thrown in. Ian Burge on cello. On some tracks. Luke that we speak of is Luke Bullen. So the drumstick banging on a pole that Rob wrote earlier is him. He does all the drums, percussion, cajon. He played with Joe Strummer. So yeah, that's the band. It's really thin because it's basically Katie and Luke.
Yeah, that's right. You get Katie some bass in there on the chorus. But that's about it. That's
she's doing it. So let's do that. Let's go ahead. I want to jump in to Stump the Genius because I think it follows up good after drumstick banging on a pole.
Okay,
here we go.
Stump the Genius, Stump the Genius, Stump the Genius. It's time to Stump the Genius.
Jump up and take your part. I take your part. All right, so drumstick banging on a pole. Just kidding. Stump the Genius. We're going to play horse trivia. What? Black horse in the cherry tree. We're okay. Going on a little horse trivia.
All right.
Got eight questions for you, Rob.
This is going to be 0 of 8.
Here we go. What is question one? Where's my bell? Okay. He's going to do good. What is a female horse called?
A ninny?
A mare.
Okay. That's right.
All right, a ninny.
I didn't say a ninny. That's like a name for an idiot, right?
Okay, I think so.
I was thinking like a whinny. You say a horse whinnies.
I guess. What? I guess. A ninny. Okay. What color can a horse not see? Just pick a color if you don't know.
Orange?
Red.
Okay. Interesting.
What was the 19th century novel about a horse that was written
Black
by...
Black Beauty.
Black Beauty. Yay! We got one out the gate.
Weirdly, it's the question about a book.
I know. Right? Wow. We're about to catch some momentum. Here we go. What was the mid-20th century TV show featuring a talking horse?
Mr. Ed.
Ed. Okay. Man, we've got some momentum. All right. We're 50% right now. Which Disney princess had a horse named Major?
Which Disney princess had a horse named
Rob,
Major?
Big Disney princess.
I'm going to take a guess here. Is it Mulan?
It's Cinderella.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So we're all right. We're still within grounds. In 1973... which horse won the Triple Crown? And before you answer, it's probably the most popular horse.
Secretariat.
Right? Okay, there we go.
I do know that.
So we're 50%. Here we go. Two left to be over the Mendoza line.
Okay.
True or false? We'll make both these. Horses cannot breathe through their mouth.
That's such a weird thing. I'm going to say it has to be true.
That is weird and true.
Wow.
True or false? Horses have the largest eyes of any land mammal.
Any land mammal, largest eyes. I don't know. Like, you think elephants. Elephants are huge, but I think they have small eyes. Giraffes got some pretty big eyes, though. I'm going to go, boy, wait, did you say land animal or mammal?
Land mammal.
Land mammal. So I don't even know what all mammals are. I don't know. I don't know if a giraffe is a mammal.
50%.
I'm going to say no, false.
Okay, it's true.
Dang it.
Biggest eyes. Well, we finished 50%, right, so we'll call that a win.
Okay.
But we are a music podcast, so we're going to Stump the Genius round two.
Whoa.
Here we go with some music stuff. Here we go. We're going to name this horse artist.
Okay.
You're going to toss me the cable. So this songs will have horses in them. I got 9 songs. Let me think here real quick. I'm going to...
So these are horse songs, not necessarily horse artists.
Nope. And you're going to name me the artist... of which...
I see. Okay.
So I'm going to play the song. Let me think. 9. How much per song? Let me give you a minute. I think a minute. Can you get through 9?
In a minute? Let's try
that's,
it.
That's about 6 seconds a
song. We don't want to drag on our dear listener. So.
Exactly. So we're going to go... We're going to give him 1 minute. You want to put a timer? You want to put a minute timer?
Yeah.
While Rob's looking up the minute timer, I'm going to queue up horse trivia or horse Stump the Genius.
Now, okay, when you make these playlists for Stump the Genius, do you make them public on Spotify? Could somebody go on Spotify right now and find JP's horse trivia playlist?
I delete them as soon as we record them.
Okay.
So, yeah, no, I don't want somebody, because somebody looks in my library and they're like, what in the world? This guy's got the weirdest thing ever. All right, here we go. We're getting, let me know when you're ready.
All right, I got a timer set for 1 minute. And
1 minute, and I will give a countdown. Here we go.
That's Horse with No Name, America.
America. Oh, man. And you can pass anytime if you get
stuck.
That's
it's a horse song, right?
It is.
Oh,
if you get stuck, pass.
Pass for now. Oh, that's what? Red Horse. Dark Horse. Katy Perry.
Katy Perry. Good job. Oh, man. This is. Oh, these go so quick. Pass if you get stuck.
Ooh.
You're gonna get some momentum here.
Pass. Oh, another Horse Trippers Blues, Counting Crows.
Counting Crows. If you... This takes a minute to get into. I should have given you more time.
Let's up it to 90 seconds.
You know this one?
I don't have a clue what
this is. Okay, you know the artist, but go ahead, pass.
Okay, pass. I, bro.
You'll get there once you hear the first thing. People are yelling at you.
I know, right? Is it?
I should.
This is gonna be somebody super obvious,
so,
right?
Let me try to get some vocals.
This time, cause I
that's Taylor.
That's Taylor's. Okay. Yeah. That's whatever. Okay. Let me go back to the others and let's just see how quickly we can get. There. Actually, I had one more.
Yeah. Scoot Ford's. And...
you know,
the theme from Bonanza.
No.
Oh, that's Save a Horse by a Cowboy, Big and Rich.
Big and Rich. Good job. Okay, let me try to get you back to this one that we passed.
Not going to make it.
It isn't get too far.
You know this? Oh, man. That's Beer for My Horses, Toby Keith and Willie Nelson.
All right.
And I passed this one because it takes too while to get it. You know,
I got my
would you get, you know who that artist is?
Switchfoot?
Switchfoot.
Okay.
Dark Horses. I love that song. That's my deep cut of
I don't know the song, but I know John Foreman's voice.
I didn't even get to this one.
That's Free Falling Tom Petty.
That's right.
Why is that a horse song?
Really?
Free Falling?
Yeah, think about it.
Oh, and horses. In America, too.
She loves horses. Wow. Have you seen Kevin Bacon do that?
Yes, I think we talked about that on our
so
Tom Petty
funny.
Episode.
That's right. So good.
Dang
loves
it.
Horses. Okay. I don't even know. I lost track of count. But
yeah, I don't know. I flopped. I
hope you guys had fun with some horses. You did pretty good.
If
you did
all right.
You did over 50%.
If my performance was a horse, I'd be headed to the glue factory. Okay.
Oh, man.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about the album, Eye to the Telescope. You ever know? Did you have friends with a telescope? I'm just kidding. We did all that already.
I was like, what is happening?
It was released in the UK December 2004, and it was re-released less than a month later in January 2005. How weird is that?
Yeah.
Here's what happened. Katie had a great performance on a show called Later with Jules Holland,
which we talked with her about.
Some buzz. Yeah. And so Relentless Records reissued the album in January 05, but still in the UK only. It didn't release in the US until February of 2006. Took a full year, which seems like a long time.
Yeah.
It was the number 50 best-selling album of the 2000s in the UK. Like, of that decade, it was the number 50 album.
That's up there.
Massive. It was nominated for a 2005 Mercury Prize for Best Album from the UK or Ireland, along with X and Y by Coldplay and a few others. That prize was won by the Anthony and the Johnsons album, I Am a Bird Now. I'm always shocked. We've talked about this. Always shocked about how frighteningly unaware I am of some UK music. Like, I just don't know it. You know what I mean? Stuff that's huge that we've never heard of, right? You get into the, like, Joe Dolce's of the world especially, but, you know, I had no idea what that is. It also includes the number 21 Hot 100 hit, Suddenly I See, which should probably a little Suddenly I See.
Yeah, absolutely.
Talk about another mean tone.
I like this song a lot.
I love melodies that land on the flat seven.
Silver pool of light. People who surround and feel the benefit of it.
Great melody.
Should you kept a
great cadence on the melody.
Suddenly I see. This is what I want to be. Suddenly I see.
So that's Katie crushing it, Suddenly I See. And then Other Side of the World, which also charted really well in the UK. Let's see. Eye to the Telescope was the number 7 UK album of 2005, according to the official charts company. It was the number 33 Billboard European album of 2005. And in 2006, it was number 55. It was the number 7 U.S. Billboard album of 2006, the number 12 U.S. top rock albums, and number 137 on the Billboard 200 again in 2007. So, like, didn't just hop in and leave, but stuck around.
Staying power, yeah.
It's certified 5 times platinum in both the UK and Ireland, double platinum in Europe as a whole, and platinum in the U.S., Canada, and New Zealand, and it has sold more than 4 million copies worldwide. It is listed as the number 51 UK album of the decade, according to the official charts company, and the number 34 female album of all time in Ireland. So that's, I mean, when you think about, like, of all female albums ever released in Ireland, Eye to the Telescope is number 34 all time, period. And of course, we had to know what the top five
absolutely
are, right? So the top five biggest female albums of all time in Ireland. Number five, you want to take just take a wild guess. You're not going to get it right.
Five.
You'll go, okay, that makes sense. But it's
Ireland.
Doesn't have to be like by UK artists. This is by anybody.
Cranberries.
Cranberries, not on there. Okay. Not in that top five, sorry. Okay. So I'll just go with it.
Just help me.
Number five is Tracy Chapman by Tracy Chapman.
Okay.
Tracy Chapman's debut. Number four is Spirit by Leona Lewis.
I would never have
kind of a
there
surprise. Yeah. Number three, Back to Black, Amy Winehouse.
Okay.
Number two, The Fame by Lady Gaga.
Okay.
Number one, you want to take a guess?
No.
Now giving that back. Okay. Number one is 21 by Adele. Those okay are the top five like female albums of all time in Ireland. Let's see a little bit more on Katie Tunstall, aka Kate Victoria Tunstall. She was nominated for the Brit Award for Best British Live Act and Best Breakthrough Award in 2006, and she won the award for European Border Breakers, which that just sounds like a cool category.
Yeah.
I guess it's kind of a crossover term, I assume, unless she literally broke some kind of border. I don't know. Maybe that's a thing.
Tear down the wall.
She also won the Novello Awards for Suddenly I See, Scottish Style Awards for Most Stylish Band or Musician, and the BMI London Pop Awards for Suddenly I See and Other Side of the World. More recently, she won a 2016 Music Week Award for Inspirational Artist of the Year.
That's awesome.
How about that? Here's a little bit from Wikipedia. A little bit. That's what I said. Shouldn't have done that. Here's a little bit more on Katie. This is from Wikipedia. Tunstall's first name is Kate, but she chooses to use her initials KT, pronounced Katie, instead, saying, quote, "Katie just makes me think of a buxom lass baking bread for her man working in the fields. I have no problem with that, but it's just not really how I pictured being a rock star." End quote. The spelling KT, as opposed to just Katie, also differentiates her from fellow singer Katie Malua, and she also said that she derived KT from KT Impact, the name of a geological event that caused the extinction of dinosaurs.
Back-to-back Kates for
that's right. Kate Taylor, also a KT, mm-hmm, right?
Yeah.
And then, yeah, Katie Tunstall. How about that? And then
Taylor did it first, one Kate week.
That's right. And then my last note that I have on her is that very recently, she headlined Times Square's New Year's Eve celebration in 2021 into 2022. Like this most recent New Year's Eve, she played as the ball dropped in Times
awesome
Square, headlining that cool concert event. So that's a thing that for me, I always wonder if that's a thing I would want to be at.
To go to the ball drop?
Yeah, to go to the ball drop.
It's like, crowded.
It seems very crowded. It seems like it would take you a long time to get in and out.
Cold.
Cold. You're standing the whole time.
Yeah.
And like packed in like sardines.
It's kind of one of those things, I guess you should do it once to say you did it.
Yeah. That's kind of, yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
I don't even know if I want to do it
once. Yeah.
It might be one of those things that's bit like better to watch on TV.
This is going
to
sound silly, but I would want really bad seats for that. Like, I would want to stand in the back to get out quick. Oh, my gosh, I'm such an old man right now saying this.
But, like, I can see the ball.
Yeah.
The ball's huge. I'm not going to miss that.
And I could say, I was at Times Square.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
right.
I did it.
Heard the concert. Katie Tunstall was there. She was awesome.
That's right.
And then, you know, saw the ball drop. And then I was at home by, like, 1:30.
That's right.
You know? So, yeah.
Saw Ryan Seacrest on the
on the screen.
Asterisk on the screen.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's great. All right. We're going to go talk to Katie herself.
Oh, man. This is great.
And we'll be back at the end to tuck you in. But first, make sure you do a couple things. Stop whatever you're doing. If you're changing a baby, just let it wait. I promise it's going to poop some more. Just hold on a minute. Give it some time. Just save that diaper change and go to Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram and search us at Great Song Pod. Follow us there and join the Facebook group, Great Songs and the Great People Who Love Them Greatly. And do one more thing for us. If you really love the show, if you want to help us make more of it and do more with it and help us cover our costs and maybe make a little scratch on the side to buy ourselves a dinner, that would be awesome. You can do that by going to patreon.com/GreatSongPod. That's patreon.com. So that's com. If you've never heard, if you're new to the internet, com is spelled com. It's short for company or communicate. It's short for company, right? .com.
Sure.
Commerce. That's what it's short for. Everything's money. Patreon.com/GreatSongPod. Great Song Pod if you want to support the show. Whatever level of engagement you are with the show, if this is your first time listening or if you're a day one listener that listened to our very first episode on Mark Cohn, we want to thank you for hanging around and for bearing with us as we grew up in the podcast world. And thanks for your support on every level, whether you're a casual listener or a diehard Patreon supporter. Thank you so much. We are going to go talk to the one and only Katie Tunstall, and she's going to kick you in the face. And then we'll be back to tuck you in at the end.
This is the Great Song Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, as promised, we are here with the one and only Katie Tunstall joining us today via Zoom from, I don't know, whatever lovely place you're in today. Thank you so much,
Katie, for joining us. I am in Topanga Canyon.
Okay, excellent. Well, thank you so much for being with us today on the Great Song Podcast. We are excited to talk to you about some things. So let's go ahead and jump in. First of all, we are our episode is focusing on Black Horse and the Cherry Tree, one of the songs that you are best known for. So why don't we start there? Kind of give us the story. I know I've read some about it in doing research, but just kind of walk us through sort of the story of behind the song and how it came to be.
So it was a really unusual song, actually, because I think when I was writing, which is like 15 to 20 years ago now, when I wrote that song, I was definitely more in the habit of writing very, what I would call automatic writing. I think it's called automatic writing, where you really don't spend a lot of time thinking about what the lyrics are meaning. You're just writing down very spontaneously what is coming to you. And I think it's a really interesting writing practice. And I've seen it kind of written in lots of books talking about being creative. It's just when you get up in the morning, just taking a pen and just getting a journal and just writing whatever is coming out of your brain. And in some ways, it just feels like a bit of a kind of direct line to your subconscious, you know?
Sure.
You're not kind of filtering what's coming out. And I'd been listening to a lot of old blues. I'd been reading that old Alan Lomax book about kind of the anonymous blues music from South, and how a lot of these recordings were just kind of people banging things and slapping their thighs and real live mixing on a microphone where whoever was singing would come up to the mic and then they'd back off. And but at all those old recordings, you know, you have a real sense that you're in the room with these people, which I love. So I was very inspired by that. And at the same time, I just signed my record deal with a record label called Relentless, who I'm still signed to, but it's through Virgin Records in the UK. But for a very long time, I didn't want to sign a record deal. I wanted to stay independent and I wanted to do things myself. And I didn't really want to be part of the machine. And so signing a record deal for me was actually like really, I felt like I'd been, I felt a little beaten by the system because I was hoping that I didn't need to do that. And in the end that I did. And I'm, you know, I had an amazing career through signing that deal, but there was definitely a kind of rebellious part of me that felt like I was signing my soul away to the devil. And that was making me think about that old Robert Johnson, you know, blues idea of devil at the crossroads. And that's kind of what this song was about. But when people ask me about the lyrics, it's just I'm still kind of working out what that song is actually about. But yeah, I mean, the no, you're not the one for me was kind of about signing a deal.
Wow.
But kind of having to do it, you know.
Wow.
Making the pact.
Making the pact, the necessary evil of being part of the record industry. I saw you do a really cool mashup, and I don't know if you do this regular or if this was just a one time thing, but at the, I think it was the Kendall Calling Festival in 2019, you did a cool mashup of Black Horse and the Cherry Tree with Seven Nation Army, and you did essentially most of the song yourself, and then the band came in and joined you, and I think there were some of the dancing with weird horse masks and things like that. But
I basically made a deal with my crew and the band as well, actually, that they could atone for any mistakes they made if they wore costumes. And so we had some gigs where my tech and my monitor guy wore three costumes in one show.
Well, if you had let me and Rob know, we would have come prepared for all of our box questions.
Whenever you gig in Japan, there's amazing stores over there for kind of Halloween costumes and things. So we always kind of stock up on costumes when we go to Japan.
Oh, that's great.
But the other thing behind Black Horse was that I just got that loop pedal, which I kind of became known for. And really, Black Horse also was just an exercise in learning how to use the loop.
Wow.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that because obviously the Later with Jules Holland is kind of the thing that propelled, in my mind, like that got you going with the looper. Which looper pedal do you use? What's your gear of choice on that? Do you use the same one that you used then? Have you upgraded? Is it like a
JM looper? Exactly the same pedal as I first used. I started on the Mark One. It's an Akai Headrush.
Okay.
So I started on the Mark One and I then moved to the Mark Two. But I mean, it does a bunch of stuff. I have no idea. It's like a tape echo and delay. I've never even tried them. I should really like mess around, but it's a very rudimentary pedal with like one input and you can't save anything. It's all completely live. I had a really funny thing happen where I was on the road and Akai have never done me a solid. They've never sent me a thing. I've never been in touch. And my pedal, I stamp on it a lot.
Yeah.
So they tend to break now and then, and it broke. And actually the quickest way of getting another one on the road was eBay.
Really?
And I found one and I mailed the guy and I was like, wow, this is actually pretty cheap and it's kind of not been used. And so he got it sent to wherever I was on tour. And then I realized I hadn't changed my name on my eBay account that I'd set up 10 years ago. And it had my name on it. And the guy emails me and just goes, are you Katie Tunstall? And I was like, I'm just going to tell him that I am. I was like, yes, I am. He goes, well, this is really weird because I bought that loop pedal because of you.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then I got it and then I couldn't work out how to use it. And now I'm selling it to you cheaper than you would buy it for in a store. I was like, wow. I've like single-handedly lowered the market value that I need to buy.
That's great.
That worked out well for you. Worked out well.
It did. And then I put the whole thing on Twitter and it was so funny. There was so many musicians I knew going, I bought that pedal because of you and now you're going to buy it from me cheap.
That's awesome.
Wow.
So going by initials, do you ever get called the wrong initials? I go by JP, not my name is Joseph Preston. Do you ever get called the wrong initials when you were starting?
Well, because of Katie Lang, I definitely, and because of the accent thing, people sometimes think it's KD.
Yeah.
But I've just found that there when I started, when I got my deal, there was a huge kind of rush of female artists who just used their full names. Nora Jones kind of kicked it off. She was like the forerunner. And then there was just tons of singer-songwriter females just using their full names. And I just thought it would be good to do something to kind of stand out a little bit. And
well, I'm a huge fan
just
of
make
initials.
It a bit memorable.
So,
I'm a big PJ Harvey fan. So,
okay. Well, there you go.
Absolutely. Except, you know, it's actually just my initials. So it's Kate Tunstall. I think the T, I decided the T was just the. Kate the Tunstall.
Oh, that's great. Yeah,
I like that.
Absolutely. I feel like having the initials lends you some it sort of speaks to me to your attitude. I don't know why, but it makes sense to me, the initials, with your sort of attitude. And I wonder, I love
in
watching some interviews and some live footage and those kind of things. I just love the energy that you bring to everything and you just kind of have a it's almost a punk attitude that you bring sometimes that I really enjoy. And I was wondering, especially early on, maybe when you did decide to sign with a label and those kind of things, did you ever get people telling you you might need to tone this down if you want to reach a broader audience or that kind of thing? Did you ever have to fight with that kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, there is an interesting, and thank you. That's a huge compliment. I think punk spirit as a musician is a really exciting foundation to come from. Even if you're not making punk music, which I'm not, there's definitely, I feel that about myself. And I feel that, that I bring that to a live show. And there's always a kind of element of unhingedness with my recording process and with the show. I think where it became obvious was in the mixing process with the record. So I'd never really made records in studios, you know, I just kind of recorded on four tracks or whatever and put it on cassette tapes and sold it at shows and then CDs, you know. when I made this first album, I didn't really understand. No one explained to me that you record and then it gets sent to get mixed by someone and then it gets mastered by someone. I didn't really know that. And the mix of a record can completely change an album. It's really absolutely staggering how much the mix process. So when you're mixing, for those people listening who aren't familiar with the process, every piece of audio, the vocals, the guitar, the drums are all on a little separate track and they get sent to the mixer. The mixer can put effects on, they can edit, they can change the levels. So you can have a quiet drummer or a loud drummer. You can have big reverb on the vocals that makes you sound like you were in a church when you were actually recording in a bathroom.
Right.
There's so much scope for changing how something sounds in the mix. And I was absolutely broadsided because I would always be involved in the mix process now, but I didn't know that on my first record. And it kind of got whisked away and mixed without me. And it came back and just sounded so polished and kind of polite compared to what I'd actually made. And it was actually really tough on me. I was sort of really shocked, and it felt like at the time the rawness and the punkness of it kind of got ironed out, and which is crazy because when I go back and listen to it now, I still hear all the rawness in that record. It's a very raw record, so I don't know how it would have sounded if I had been in charge. But you know, it was difficult because it then went on to sell like 5 million copies. Yeah. And so I couldn't sit there going, yeah, I don't like it. but I think just overall, it's a weird process when you've not been through that before.
Yeah.
Where there's a sort of necessary collaboration on the end product, which I wasn't used to having to deal with. I was used to just doing everything myself. So there was definitely tricky. And, you know, Black Horse and Suddenly I See became these behemoth, amazing smash hits, which is just one of the most phenomenal things that can happen to you as an artist, is to have these songs that travel the world on your behalf, and everywhere you go they are already there waiting for you, you know. But also it that's what you become known for, and so that's what people expect from you. And so you then also have a kind of subsequent life of always kind of beating up against the edges of those songs and people going, oh, well, that doesn't sound like you.
Right.
It's like, well, I did have some other stuff, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, there's like 9 other songs on that record, in case you didn't know.
Yeah. But, you know, it's a fantastic problem to have,
sure.
You know, because every artist's dream really is just turning up in a new city and everyone's singing the words, which is just an amazing, amazing feeling.
Well, there's parts of these where we just kind of like gush over things that we love about the artist. And I think this will segue in nice. I love the Eye of the Telescope, the entire album. I think Another Place
Thank
to
you.
Fall is a really smart play, as track 2 can be just as important as track 1 when you're keeping up with the flow of a project. And track 3, Under the Weather, written with Tommy D. I mean, that guy's a legend. Stuff with Beyonce, Jay-Z,
great.
Janet Jackson, Adele. How'd you end up hooking up with Tommy D on the project? That's awesome.
So Tommy, when I went to London, I was in Scotland and I knew I didn't want to move to London until I actually had a bit of money in my pocket, because it's just one of those situations where, you know, being in a major and expensive city with no cash can be quite a depressing existence. Where it's actually staying in Scotland where I was living, it was cheap to live. There were places to play. I had friends there. So I told myself, right, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to go to the city until I've actually got a reason to be there. And my reason was I ended up getting a publishing deal first before my record deal. And my publisher, it was Sony, who I'm still with. And they were really cool because often, especially I was 28, 29 when I got my publishing deal. So I wasn't that young. And there's often, a kind of, I think now even more so, they push you towards co-writing and maybe writing for other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Rather than writing for yourself. But they never really did that with me. They were very confident that I was going to be an artist in my own right. So I was always just writing for myself, which was great. And Tommy was also on Sony at the time. So they hooked us up. I'd never co-written before.
Okay.
So it was quite an experience kind of getting hooked up with these different people. And another one was Martin Tarefa, yep. who I wrote Other Side of the World with. And
yep.
I've probably written 30 songs with him over the last 20 years.
Yep. I love
but
that.
Tommy and I have a song on the new record, which is probably going to be the single, actually.
Oh, cool. Oh, so you're still doing stuff with him. That's awesome. Yeah.
It was an old co-write, actually.
Oh,
was it?
But we're still very much in touch. But it was, he was awesome fun. I think I remember writing with him and I was like playing on Gene Simmons' guitar and we were having a super cool time. He's just all fun to me. He really I think values the joy of it. So if you're having a good time, you're more likely to write something good, you know.
I love that video too that you do from that one. Any song that has the phrase "feels like home" just takes me somewhere. And I want that trailer with those awesome orange curtains. Do you remember what you were writing on the window? That's like, and do you remember? Because you're writing something on the window with the rain outside.
I have no idea what I was writing. I was probably writing something mean about the director because we didn't get on.
That's good. That's funny.
It was really funny. We were kind of at odds with each other, and then because I felt like we'd had the storyline, and then he changed it on the day. And
yeah,
but the really funny thing was at the very end of the shoot, it was kind of cold that day. There was a whole thing where we were going to make it rain inside the trailer.
Okay.
So it felt like it was raining on the inside of the caravan. So the roof was chopped off because all the lighting was, you know, on top. Anyway, they were really worried about me being cold. So they put the shower heads over the trailer, turned the water on. Obviously, you're only going to get one shot.
Right. Yeah.
And it was so cold. It was just like a steam room. It was like instant steam room and you couldn't see anything.
Couldn't use any of the...
Totally unusable.
Wow. That's awesome. And you mentioned writing with Martin. I love Other Side of the World. That's a great first song. So that's pretty much the introduction to KT for the world about long distance relationships. That really hits home with me.
Yeah.
Me and my wife did a long distance when we were dating. So love that. And that's probably my favorite KT song. And my wife
thank you so much.
She would love the scarf that you're wearing in that video. She's a scarf wearer.
I still have it somewhere.
Oh, dude, that's going to be in a Hard Rock somewhere someday. That's like the scarf. That's awesome. So good stuff on that.
But Under the Weather, it was a really interesting song because that was actually, it was a good example of sort of stealth subject matter because that song was actually about 9/11.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize.
And I wrote that after the attacks and it was just, you know, where everybody really desperately wanted to be with the people they love.
Yeah.
And it was just this kind of cloud over the whole world at that time, you know? So that was actually about the terrorist attacks.
Oh, wow.
Wow. I'm going to take it back because you just made me think of something. If there was, and there probably is somewhere, something of yours in a Hard Rock somewhere. If there isn't already, there needs to be. There is. Okay. Then let's see. Is it a musical instrument or is it an article of clothing?
Yes, it's a musical instrument.
Okay, so I'm going to take a guess. I'm going to guess
a guitar would make sense, right?
Was it like an acoustic guitar or?
Not acoustic. It's actually not even real.
Oh. Okay, do tell.
It's the Mirrorball guitar from the Hold On video.
Oh, okay.
Wow. All
right. So It was the guitar that was on the cover of Jurassic Fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. Well, since we're talking about
the guitar that's on the cover is, I think, completely fake. It's just made out of like hardwood and bits of Mirrorball.
Okay.
And then the guitar that was in the Hold On video, which is in the Card Rock in Glasgow in Scotland, was just an old beat up guitar, and they just covered it in like Mirrorball tiles. Very cool. Oh, and I think my on the UK album cover, I'm actually wearing rainbow suspenders. It's a different photograph on the UK album cover, and the rainbow suspenders are also in a Hard Rock.
Nice. Cool. I love that.
I was going to say, eventually one of your cool Supro guitars needs to end up in a Hard Rock when you're done with it.
They're awesome.
I feel like they fit your vibe very well. Like they really fit that attitude that we talked about earlier. I just love
it. Yeah. Well, they also fit not having shoulder pain because those things, they're like made of fiberglass. They're plastic.
Wow.
So they're kind of like Bakelite guitars, so they're super light and really easy to play.
That's nice. Awesome. Well, you mentioned Drastic Fantastic, so I have to talk about my favorite video. I think the best music video you've done is Saving My Face. I love it with the slow motion.
Oh, thank you.
The slow motion items and the hologram versions of KT. That's so cool. So that's my favorite video. Since you talked on that, I wanted to highlight that.
So a really cool little factoid about that video is that we blow up a guitar. So part of the Saving My Face video throughout the video is this kind of slow motion. It's a Gretsch jet. I don't think it was a real Gretsch jet.
One would hope not.
But the guitar explodes and there's amazing footage of like the volume knob. So it's in reverse and the guitar is coming back together during the video. So the special effects guy was the guy who did Indiana Jones and Star Wars.
Oh, no kidding.
Well, look at that.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's serious business right there.
He was special effects royalty.
That's awesome.
That's fantastic. Well, talking about videos, I want to talk about a little bit. This is such a cool thing, and it's one of the – I don't really think I've seen this much, but you actually have a music course available by video on Music Gurus where you teach some of your songs. You talk about your creative process, even your songwriting approach, and it looks like you really had a great time doing it. What was that process like, and how's the response been?
It's been amazing, and I really enjoyed it because it was not a very conventional way of teaching. So I've never had guitar lessons. I've had some vocal coaching to sort of make sure I don't lose my voice, but I've never. I learned piano. I got piano lessons, but I've never actually had like guitar and singing lessons. So I don't really have a background of how to teach someone else how to do it. So I sort of felt a slight amount of imposter syndrome that I was sort of being asked to tell people how to do this stuff. And actually, I think it's a really nice way of teaching, of just you're actually talking about how you do what you do. Right. It's not talking about how you play guitar. Mm-hmm. You're just talking about how I play guitar and how I write songs. And often, you know, when you've taught yourself how to do these things, you've not really sat down and thought about how you do it. So it's quite interesting actually going through the process of kind of analyzing it yourself, of how do you play this song and how do you get that sound and how did I learn how to mute my guitar while I'm chugging away and, you know, kind of strumming style and just remembering back to some of the challenges that I had when I was learning and what I did to overcome them.
What's your typical most comfortable writing process? Are you guitar, pen and paper? Are you lyrics first, then put music with it? Are you music and then let's fill in the gaps later? Does it change?
I would say probably most normal is guitar, pen and paper, always. And I usually come up with a lyric or a title.
Okay.
So there's always a melody that goes with a chord progression, but I'll often find a chord progression that I like first.
Okay. And then build around the title. For the rest of the,
I think it's really interesting though. Writing lyrics first is a really good exercise because I think you do end up with a kind of slightly more poetic set of lyrics. I think when you write with no music, when it's completely unbound by rhythm. There was a song on my album Invisible Empire Crescent Moon. It's called Yellow Flower, and it was about a friend I lost to cancer, and I wrote a poem about her. And then set that to music. And I think lyrically, you can hear it's a slightly different feel. It's a more poetic feel to the lyrics because of the order of how I wrote it.
Interesting. You've done a lot of collaborating recently. You've just kind of really gone all over the map. Everyone from like Blood, Wine, or Honey to Alan Cumming. What sort of inspired this wave of creativity? Did it start as kind of a result of the pandemic and just being locked down, or something?
Yeah,
else?
Definitely. I mean, I was meant to do 200 shows in 2020.
Wow,
it was going to be an extremely busy year, and you know, it was just working out how to keep momentum going with, you know, being in the middle of a trilogy and keeping fans excited about things that you're doing and keeping them engaged, and also just keeping myself creative. Sure. It was, I usually, when I'm on the road, you don't have an awful lot of bandwidth for doing stuff like that. You're not often in an environment where you can sit and record stuff. It's always noisy. And so it was just a really nice opportunity to just say yes to stuff that I would not usually be able to do.
I'll tell our listeners an album that you have that's kind of different than the rest that I've been binging on. I've been really listening to a lot of Acoustic Extravaganza. Oh, I don't know if you can see that.
I love that record.
That's a great album. And it's, I wanted to talk a little bit, since you mentioned the mixing and the mastering part of it. I think it's pretty consistent all the way through. One thing I love about it too is, me and Rob both play in we're both church musicians, and one of the most annoying things that can be is bad usage of a tambourine. But I think your tambourine usage on track two is fantastic. So I want to give props to the good use of the tambourine, because I don't always get to highlight that.
Bad tambourine
will ruin everything. Yeah. So smart tambourine.
That's a certain type of purgatory.
it really is. Good. Yeah. And you know, live, I don't know how you do it. I mean, I was watching you live and then realized that not only had you had added some tambourine to a loop, but then you were kicking it live. Yeah. Like you're stomping on the tambourine live while you're playing. And I don't know how you keep it all in, you know, on track. I mean, how long did it take you to get comfortable where you're like, I can do this in front of, you know, 2,000 people now and not worry about messing it up?
It was funny actually, because I realized when I was using a tambourine, because I stamp it with my foot, that if you stamp on a tambourine on the ground, nothing happens, because it has to have some resistance.
Yeah.
It's got to bounce back up basically for you to hit it. And so I need to patent it, and I feel slightly nervous giving the secret away, but it's a cleaning sponge and duct tape.
Oh, wow. It's fancy. Well, yeah, audio copyright. You're
That's
good.
That's right. Yeah.
You're set.
Yes.
Verbal
thank
copyright.
You.
Verbal copyright.
So you mentioned the trilogy that you are at this point still in the middle of, or two-thirds of the way through. Tell us about, for the people who may be new to the idea, tell us about how the idea for the trilogy came about, and then the first two albums, Ken and Wax, and sort of the difference in approach, and then maybe where you're headed, you know, in the conclusion.
Yeah, so the trilogy, I didn't really think about that until after the first record was done. And I was actually on tour with Ken, and I wasn't going to make a record for a while. I'd kind of, you know, gone through massive life changes. I'd got divorced. My dad had died. I'd moved continents. I'd sold everything I owned. And I really thought I was going to take a break. I felt pretty burnt out. And then I just was driving PCH and listening to Tom Petty and Fleetwood Mac and just writing these kind of anthemic,
that'll do it,
you know, air punch pop songs. And it just felt like a positive group of songs that I think if I'd written more of Invisible Empire, Crescent Moon, kind of melancholic folk stuff, I probably wouldn't have put a record out at that time. But I really felt excited about what I was making and got this kind of rush of excitement about putting that into the world, and worked with Tony Hoffer. He's an amazing producer. Got a new manager, and kind of it was a real second wind. And it was while I was on tour with that record, I'd got into meditating as part of a kind of just a new life kind of tool. And it was during meditating in a park in Nashville, and I just suddenly thought I should do a trilogy. This album is all about the kind of resurrection of the soul. And I really love the soul, body, mind subjects and differences. And it's just such, and I love the idea of doing something conceptual and also doing something, a project that was longer than one record, because, you know, just getting into this world where you release a record and then it's done and right. you kind of over in a flash and you wait 6 months and then it's a comeback. And I was like, oh my God, you know, this is crazy. I wanted to do something to kind of keep the flow of work going. And it's really been an amazing experience because I'm suddenly find myself, you know, 7 years down the line and finishing it off. And the third record is done. The last round of mixing.
Yay.
So that's going to be coming out this year.
I'll tell our listeners, both projects are fantastic. I love Two Way with James Bay. I'm hooked on the drum intro and another great video game music video, which is so cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. We've had a lot of fun with these videos.
That was a great one. Little Red Thread off of On Wax. I actually heard the acoustic version first. So I heard your acoustic version before I heard that. And I was like, oh, I love that. Yeah. And then I heard the riff as it's supposed to be like on the, and I was like, oh, what a great opener. And I'm like, that's the best opening track you've had since Eye of the Telescope. I think it's a great out the gates opener. So good stuff. I would tell our listeners,
Wax,
pick them both up.
Wax is probably my favorite record at the moment that I've made.
Okay.
It was the one that I really felt like I was able to capture the energy of my live performance on record. And I was working with Nick McCarthy from Franz Ferdinand, and he's now producing. And it was just amazing working with him. And it really was like a garage full of guitars and keyboards and drums. It was
awesome.
Just his studio is really DIY. And it was just really good to get back to that kind of gritty DIY vibe of making a record.
Well, that's great. Well, you've been awesome. Yeah. We want to be respectful of your time. We've had a blast with you. Hope you've had a good time. There's one question that we ask everybody before we let them go.
Yeah.
So you're on tour either by yourself or with whoever, and you go into a gas station. What is your gas station snack food of choice? And while you're thinking of it, I'll tell you mine. I get a Three Musketeers bar every time. When I was growing up, my mom would say you could have any candy bar you want, and that's the most ounces.
So awesome.
I get a Three Musketeer bar. What is your gas station snack food of choice?
Jar of peanut butter.
Okay. Well, the jar. Yes. Just go in jar.
The whole jar.
How do you eat it? Spoon? Crackers?
You usually have to grab a spoon. Might have a bit of celery in the bag.
Okay. All right. There you go. Peanut butter.
Excellent.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah, go peanut butter.
Well, next time you're in
absolutely tour essential.
Well, next time you're in Nashville, look us up. We'll grab a jar of peanut butter and sit around and chat.
Now, important question though. This is a divisive question. What is your if all peanut butters are an option, which is the one that you grab as far as brand?
Oh, I mean,
I'll do this even different. Would you go crunchy or creamy peanut butter?
Yeah, that's an important question as well.
Crunchy.
Okay.
No. We were going so good. Everything was awesome.
I'm with you on crunchy.
I'm creamy peanut butter.
Okay. Always crunchy. Listen, I'm not mad at smooth. Okay.
You ain't hating, but if you get a choice.
But we're probably going to go Skippy.
Okay. Skippy. That's a goodie.
There you go. Kind of an underrated.
I mean, you know, when I'm at home, it's like the organic, no sugar, gas station rules, completely
Skippy.
Different.
Yeah.
That's good.
Okay. Yeah. I really like those bags of pickles.
Yes, that they have right up by the register.
The little pickles and peanut butter.
They're really good.
Congratulations, that's different. We hear a lot of the same. You are different, so that's wonderful.
I eat weird food. It's true.
Thank you so much
You've
for joining
wonderful.
Us.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. All the best.
We'll catch up soon.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye-bye.
This is the Great Song Podcast.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, was Katie Tunstall. So awesome.
So great.
Best of luck recovering your dentures after the shot that she gave you to the mouth.
And that that wraps up Ladies Month.
Yeah.
Hope you guys have enjoyed May.
Dude, this has been one of my favorite all-time theme months.
Been fun.
You know what I mean? Just as far as it was just all killer, no filler in Ladies Month.
Good.
Not that we ever bring filler.
All
I'm just
killer,
saying,
no filler.
That's just
I like
a phrase that.
That
you say.
That's good.
You know,
that's good.
But yeah.
And next week is a landmark episode for us. It's number 200.
Yay!
Hey, buddy. So we're raising our goblets in celebration. So come enjoy episode 200. You know, we go big on those landmarks.
That's
ones.
Right. Yeah, we're not letting off the pedal at all after Ladies Month. We are ramping up actually toward the end of the season. So we have just a few episodes left in season 9, which is crazy to think about.
That's nuts.
But man, it's going to be a lot of fun. So join us again next week for episode 200 of the Great Song Podcast. Thanks for listening to Ladies Month. Thanks for listening to Modern Men of Pop before that. whatever the crap else we did before that. I don't know, movie month, I think it was. All the stuff we've done this season. It's been such a fun season. To think that this season started like 3 months ago with YMCA.
Felipe Rose.
Right? Felipe Rose from YMCA. It seems like a year ago.
It does.
Easy. Man. But it's been one season. This season's been so packed with awesome songs and guests. And we just got more coming. We are not letting up. So we'll check you guys next week. Until then, I'm Rob.
I am JP.
Go listen to some music.